Lil, put aside the ego and embrace the moment.
It's time for another midweek drive transcontinental adventure.
We had hopes to actually be accessing Louis Savvy at this stage for the online Sci-Fi London Film Festival. But he's lost in cyberspace. However, the great news is we've got two fabulous individuals who'll be with us, and we may be joined by a third as the thing proceeds. We have got ace director, BAFTA award-winning director, of course, Graham Harper with us. How are you, Graham?
I'm very well, thank you. I hope you are.
Excellent. And we also have, from Wales, of course, the finest lead writer Starburst magazine has ever actually had, Robin Pierce. How are you, Robin?
Hello there. Wow, excellent. Big words.
Yeah, well, you know, I like to build up that whole sequence. And in a week where basically President Trump has officially pardoned the turkey, marvellous. Always good to see Trump pardoning turkey and not voting for Christmas. We also welcome from North Carolina, Jessica Burtis. How are you, Jessica?
Hello, I'm all right. How is everyone?
Well,
yeah, really good.
Very good indeed. Now, Jessica, Thanksgiving, as we said, you're the only one of the four of us who will be celebrating that. Although there are Native Americans who might say, why are you celebrating taking over our land? I don't know. I just put it out there. What things go on in North Carolina in these Thanksgiving days of 2020, when, of course, the official line is, if you want to live, bring your own food. Don't risk infection.
Yeah, it's definitely not as festive as in years past. We usually have all these little go see family down in South Carolina. And there's an event that happens in Charlotte called the Turkey Trot, where it's basically a run, like a three-mile run, I think, where everyone just comes in costumes. I've seen people dressed up as slices of pie and turkeys and any kind of thing that you can imagine to run the race.
In other words, the bulk of the Senate houses of the White House, basically. Fantastic. I mean, Graham, the Turkey Trot. I mean, that sounds to me as though it's a documentary waiting to be made, surely.
Oh, it sounds painful. It sounds like a very bad medical condition.
It does.
Yeah, I think you're referring there to the trots, which is obviously confused with Deli Belly and a variety of other diarrhea-based scenarios. But, you know, clearly from our point of view, the Turkey Trot is... I was thinking more of a gavotte, actually. More kind of like a pacey gobble, 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 you know, with various other sort of thing, rushing away in their own sort of zones. I think that's a way forward. I mean, Robin, is there a kind of leak trot that you can actually sort of say is an equivalent?
How far off script have we just gone? I mean, you just mentioned something called a gavotte. Is that Gal Gavotte?
No, gavotte. Gavotte.
It's a sort
Come on, guys. It's the best I can do with the material you're giving me. He wants to know if I do a leak run. I mean, no, that is in normal circumstances. Yeah, but thank you for asking.
That's okay. I mean, you know, every so often we feel on the midweek drive that maybe we're reaching that chronologically gifted scenario where with only 17 more downloads to go before we reach 200,000 people have actually downloaded shows in this system, that maybe actually we should start talking about prostate challenges. But I won't.
And so some of them are still listening.
So, as I say, Jessica, you've wrapped up your particular sort of term from that point of view, and yet even on Thanksgiving, you've still got a term paper to be submitted. Do they have no sort of sympathy with you in terms of celebrating Thanksgiving?
No, sadists, all of them. I can't. I have several exams in December, which is usually when we have them, but I don't know why my professor has decided that it's the perfect time to do a paper is the day before Thanksgiving. It's a struggle, but I'll get there.
Yeah. I mean, can we help Jessica? Because I mean, obviously Graham and Robin, we can feed in stuff. What's the topic that you're working on?
It's communication theory. So, it's lots of fun. Just buckets of fun.
I should hope so. I mean, you got the one-step, two-step flow of communications. I mean, that could actually go to the basic of trotting in all sorts of ways. So you can actually open up a whole variety of things from that point of view. You've got the hypodermic syringe model, although that's obviously been excluded for many a year now. It's also old-fashioned, really. And you've got lots of other things that could bubble on as well. I mean, that would be my two penneth. Graham?
Oh, I'm totally lost. What I want to know more is about your comment. I'm sorry, Jessica. This is more about your comment that Donald Trump has pardoned the turkey. What's that?
It's basically just a little weird tradition. I have no idea. We have very weird traditions over here, but like every year they'll take a turkey and they'll say, this one will not be turned into a Thanksgiving dinner. And then he gets to live a luxurious life for the rest of his turkey days.
I understand. I was going to say, because what's a turkey ever done to you?
I know the word pardoning is so weird. It sounds like he's being like pardoned from a crime. Just, I don't know why we call it that. It's a very big event.
It has to be said, it's probably the most presidential I've ever seen Donald Trump in the last 4 years. You know, the moment when he actually gave that turkey the pardon and effectively sort of announced that, is it Corn, I think, who was actually there? Because Corn's actually been partnered up with Cobb, which is nice to actually know that, you know, Corn has been pardoned, and Cobb, his faithful companion turkey, will also be pardoned. And as Jessica's rightly said, they live out their days quite happily without fear of any stuffing or any other sort of scenario encroaching upon the turkey.
So this year alone, he has pardoned three turkeys. There was Corn, there was Cobb, there was Roger Stone.
Yeah, well, there we are, you see. And obviously, he's opening up a whole range of other elements as well. And Jessica, we've also heard that America, a bit like Britain, is going through another major wave of COVID-19 and so on. Is there a lot of fear that's still around there? I mean, we're talking about, obviously, huge swathes of Hollywood shutting down again or having to have problems. Theatres, obviously, unlikely to open. And HBO, or indeed AT&T and Warner Brothers, have effectively pressed that doomsday button and said, it's okay, if you want to watch Wonder Woman 1984 and you're not in the United States of America, just pirate it. Just go on pirate sales. Just go there. You know, that's the line. What are the general vibes?
I think that it's surprising to hear that we're having a second wave, because I think most people over here don't think we've ever gotten out of the first one. It's kind of just been continuing. I think everyone's very, very sick of it. There were a lot of talks about they're basically begging people not to, you know, go away from home for Thanksgiving. So I think everyone's a bit nervous that with COVID cases coming back, Thanksgiving is just going to exacerbate that. And it's, I think, made people quite nervous.
Jessica, do you think Biden's going to make a huge difference?
I don't know. I really hope so. I think maybe I'm a bit pessimistic. I think I tend to not trust any politician. I don't put much hope in them until they've actually done what they say.
Yeah, that's not pessimistic. That's realistic, Jessica.
Yeah. So I really hope that things will change. I think that at this point, though, wearing masks and socially distancing, I think those things have been politicized so heavily that I think it'll be hard to go back to, you know, it's just a health issue, unfortunately. But we'll see.
I mean, I've got to point out as well, for the benefit of the listener, because after all, it is radio, that behind her, Jessica has a poster which has "The End" written on it. Which
does sound ominous.
It says it's all over. I mean, maybe to actually quote from the original Batman 66 movie, it should be called "The Living End." You know, to actually work through the system and that system. What the hey? Robin might have more to say about that. Robin, any questions you'd like to put about thoughts on lockdown, or indeed the movie industry, or are you devastated that Wonder Woman 84 is going live in the States, it's going on services there, but in Britain, unless you want to pirate the whole thing, no way, Jose.
Well, I'm kind of hoping that one of our streaming services will pick it up, like they did with The Witches. Because it's obviously going to be a huge money spinner for them if they manage to stream that on Christmas Day. And, you know, I would certainly pay to see it. I'm dead against piracy. I love the film industry. You know, I've spent a fair amount on equipment, TV, sound system, the whole thing. And I want the best presentation possible. So for the sake of seeing a film early, I wouldn't bother with, you know, fuzzy downloads or subtitles in Arabic or whatever it is. I never have, and I don't believe that I ever will. But if they made it available, I believe it was Amazon Prime who took The Witches at the, you know, from HBO Max. So yeah, this is what I'm hoping. If I can watch Pixar's Soul in the afternoon on Disney Plus, and I can possibly watch Wonder Woman 84 in the evening, I am sorted.
There you have it. Graham, your thoughts on this whole streaming world in which we're occupying now, because clearly the film industry, as we've known it, may never be the same ever again in terms of theatrical releases.
Yeah, I've given some thought to it and wonder what's going to happen. But you know what? I've got good feeling that hopefully during the latter part of next year, we will be back to normal. I think we'll all be going to the cinema and COVID will be a thing of the past if the vaccine works.
Well, absolutely, because as you might know, Graham, I am lead writer for Starburst magazine, and yesterday they announced that they are not publishing now until April, because there's literally nothing going on out there in film or TV, sci-fi, horror, fantasy, that we can actually write about or enough about in order to fill a magazine. Now, we sent our previous issue out to our usual distributors, and when the big High Street one had to go to lockdown, they pulped thousands of issues. So, you know, we'll be doing stuff online, obviously, but Starburst won't be hitting the news agent shelves for about another 5 months. So, you know, it's kind of worth remembering that when you talk about the film industry, it's not the producers, the directors, the actors, and all the rest of it. It's all the satellite things that depend, yeah, like the magazines and the people who produce the merchandise and all this. It's just the tip of the iceberg. Because we had to close down the last lockdown, but this one's going to be, you know, sadly even longer, simply because we have nothing to say.
Are you, Robin?
I'm so sorry. You go on.
No, go on, Graham.
I was just going to say, I are you in danger of not opening again? I hope not.
Oh no, I don't think so. I've spoken to Mike Royce, the publisher, and he is confident that as soon as the retail outlets are out again, we will be back. Good. As Fu Manchu said, the world has not heard the last of us.
And the good news is, of course, speaking about hearing, there are episodes of Resonance Rewind, Midweek Drive, Piercing the Veil, all sorts of other things that people can occupy themselves with to actually sort of entertain themselves in these far-flung times. So, good
and of
news
course,
there.
You keep me well occupied, don't you?
Just part of the ongoing scenario. Graham, we were going to talk, obviously, about the London Film Festival, shall we say Sci-Fi London. Louis hasn't been able to actually connect with us today for reasons unknown at this stage, but what the hey. It's an online film festival that's actually there. Do you feel that, again, that's something I know when we spoke to Louis last, he wasn't that keen on, but do you think that's something which, you know, in essence, we need to also embrace as we sort of enter the future?
Absolutely. Well, me personally, no, but I think this time, I don't think he'll be let down. I think his film festival online will be a huge success. So I think he'll be well subscribed to. For the future, I want to see films on a big screen. I do not want to watch anything on my laptop. And certainly, I watch things like The Good, The Bad, The Ugly is coming up on Friday, and I will be watching it miserably on Channel 5, because every 7 minutes there are adverts. It's literally 7 minutes of film, then an advert. But I still will persevere with the television, just because the picture is and the sound system is a little bit better than my laptop.
Yeah, how wonderfully sort of 20th century of you, Graham, actually watching a television set. I mean, how strange and weird is that? I mean, it's amazing.
Well, I have a complaint about it. I've got, over the last 2 years, I've subscribed to a plasma screen, or whatever it's called nowadays, a digital television, this plasma. And everybody raves about these wonderful new big televisions and how nice and letterboxy they are. I had, before that, an old, I can't remember, JVC, analog-type television. It was almost a cathode ray tube. The picture was excellent. It was absolutely brilliant. And I'm very fussy about you know, high definition and everything absolutely sharp and pristine or whatever. I prefer lovely, long-lensed, fabulously shot pictures. And to watch it on the JVC television I had before, the one I have now, which is a plasma, was far superior. And we all go on about how wonderful these televisions are. I think they're dreadful. They destroy whatever the filmmakers have made in the first place, because they can never live up to the standard of the cameras that are actually making the product.
Robin, bit of a shocking revelation there from Graham. He might actually one day actually come and actually look at your sound system and say, this is appalling. What's going on here?
I'm actually with Graham 100%. I don't really go for this 4K nonsense, and somebody's talking about bringing out a 10K. Now, at the end of the day, there is a finite amount of information that your eyes can take in and relay to your brain before it's all lost. And I think it bottoms out at about 4K. The TV that I use has HDR, but not 4K. And I believe that it's HDR that is the more important one. I mean, things look pretty natural on it, but I've had TVs before that actually everything looked fake and plasticky, and I just couldn't be doing with it. So yeah, I'm with you. I mean, this high resolution, it doesn't look real to me, because everything has a little bit of, you know, a blur to the background or whatever. You don't want everything right in your face, do you? I'm with you all the way, Graham.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad. I think we've been duped, obviously, because the money has gone down a certain route in its development, and so much money has gone down that route, they're not going to change until somebody else comes along in the next 10 years and really does improve it, and the money's gone that way. So at the moment, we're having to put up with the best of a bad lot. To me, I'm sure the television companies who manufacture these televisions would like to sue me, but...
Whatever happened to the simple notion when we were younger, Graham, of having your television fixed? If it breaks down these days, people just go and buy a new one. What happened to TV
repair?
Because
you put the old one in a landfill, obviously, to actually help poison the environment. Jessica, yes. are you bothered about the television and the sense of that? It's just a case, just give me a screen, that's all I need.
I guess I haven't considered it very much. I think a lot of time at school, we would just end up having to watch a show or a movie on our laptops or on our phones. So we weren't allowed to be very picky about like our quality. But no, I think that, yeah, if you're watching a film or a movie, you know, the quality of it is such an important thing, and it can really affect your experience 100%.
Graham, are you a fan of Blu-rays at all?
The answer to that is no, because I've never been able to actually watch a Blu-ray film. I haven't got the equipment that translates it, so I can't say either way. You'll have to tell me why it's so brilliant.
Because they're blue.
Everything's far sharper.
Sorry, say it again.
Everything is far sharper.
Oh, right.
And also you get a bigger, wider, more realistic sound to it as well. But right. Then again, you know, they talk about digital sound all over the place, but as far as I'm aware, your ears are analog.
Yes, but that's because it's part of an illusion. Ultimately, we're all just plugged into the great computers. As we know, Yes. We're simply battery sources for them. Jessica,
are you
going to
take the blue pill or the red pill?
These days, I'll stick to my coenzyme Q10 Pharma Nord material. It's all very good. Shameless plug. Jessica, any questions you'd like to put to Graham or indeed Robin?
How are you all spending this week? Are there any projects that you're working on? What's going on?
Graham, you want to take this one first?
So I'm thinking about casting for a project that I'm involved with, which has not got its money in place yet, but I have a feeling it will be, because it's a really good subject that I think will be very popular. So I'm thinking about casting ideas at the moment. So that's sort of where I am. The rest of the time is lounging about with trying to get myself domesticated enough to do some homework, you know, repairing things and putting our house together. properly.
Yeah, great, Graham, you've got the research for the midweek drive Zoomers to actually cope with. By the way, shameless plug, Sarah Huntley's always available. Sorry, usually available, end of. In terms of casting, I just thought I'd put it out there. You know, that's all right.
She's never far away in my mind.
And I think Malcolm Tomlinson, who will be joining us, say, tomorrow, he's sort of also quite keen. But Robin, what about yourself then? Is it just a case of focusing on life, the universe, or still stressing that in 2021, your daughter Tiffany will be getting married?
She was supposed to be getting married last month, but, you know, pandemic saw the end of that. So it's postponed until next year. Pretty much all sorted out for Christmas, finished all the Christmas shopping. So really pretty much just lounging around and contemplating life, the universe, and all its vicissitudes.
How have you done all your Christmas shopping? Online?
Online, Amazon? Yeah. Online.
All those little shops.
Yeah. They don't care in Wales. They just want the big stores.
We live in a small town. And the kind of things that my lot wanted this Christmas, cameras, vinyl cutters, stuff like that, you really can't buy locally. So, and I didn't want to go to any crowded shopping centres. England is pretty much closed to me, so, you know.
And, of course, on the other point, as we sort of begin to wrap up this whole sequence, we've got the notion that the list for the richest people in the world was revealed today. And Bill Gates has actually dropped to number 3. And because the man behind the Tesla, of course, Elon Musk, has shot up to number 2. Number 1, of course, Jeff Bezos, probably put there by Robin Pierce and the Pierce family in many ways, as the owner of Amazon, etc. Graham, any surprises
that's right.
In terms of that?
Stoke the fire. Graham's giving me the evil eye.
No. I think I'm more surprised you've done all your Christmas shopping. A, because I was asking how.
Not half as surprised as I am.
But I haven't begun to do any of it. Right. And I'm waiting to be able to go somewhere after the 2nd of December, which I think you're quite as foolish.
Graham, bear in mind, it's the thought that counts, okay? Thought.
That could be cheaper.
Yeah.
And it counts as well. So there we go.
Well, I thought about getting a gift, but I didn't.
Which could open up a whole range of other bits and pieces. Later on, of course, we'll be speaking to a whole range of other fine folk. Michelle Monroe is actually signed up to come back and join us for another production. But we've neatly actually gone from gobbling turkeys being pardoned by Trump. Marvellous. Through to the richest. I mean, Jessica, any thoughts on the richest people? I mean, they're all American, of course.
Oh, really? I hadn't realized that. I think that, you know, I don't know, Elon Musk, I'm not surprised that he's up there at all. it's just crazy seeing how rich some of these people are. It's just absolutely shocking.
Bill Gates, of course.
I'm sorry.
Go on.
I was going to say, I think he should bring out a perfume.
Ooh. Elon Musk.
Yeah. And on that bombshell, clearly, as it takes a communication scholar to actually address that. You know, you could actually include that in terms of your paper, communication theories. For instance, if Elon Musk brought out a perfume, would it be called M? You know, genius. So I think we'll go to the younger soul for this routine. Jessica, would you like to put those last two questions to Graham and Robin, please?
Yes. Graham and Robin, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us today?
Yes, thank you.
Yes, very much. Lovely.
And will you be joining us again?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
We're too good a team now, aren't we, Graham?
Yes. We're working up to it, though. We're going to get better.
Bit like the words of Michael Arteta in charge of Arsenal, but that's a different soccer reference, which neither Robin nor Jessica will probably get. But what the hey. Jessica, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us today?
Yes, as always.
Sort of paving the way for the joys of your Thanksgiving. Of course, if you're in the Burgess household, maybe you might want to put your mum on one of these days. You know, she can join us and do all sorts of things. You can actually say goodbye, celebrate the whole system, and everybody. But for the moment, have a great Thanksgiving. We will connect with you for a couple of sessions. We've got a few things happening in terms of the day after Thanksgiving, which is very dark, I believe. Or is it black? I don't know. It's very strange. Final point on that. I mean, I've done a couple of features on that already, but Black Friday, are we, and followed by Cyber Monday, do we just think that's Americanized capitalist consumer-based nonsense? Or, Jessica, are you living for Black Friday?
I think I've fallen into the trap of, you know, it is nice having all the sales, but I had to work retail last year at a store on Thanksgiving because they decided to start Black Friday early, and so I think I'm a bit over it now.
I mean, there's something slightly wrong about that, you know. So let's start Black Friday early, so let's put it on Thanksgiving as well. Not on, really. It's like, I mean, the other gripe that I actually have, and I'll raise this as we approach the actual thing, but I think it's actually wrong to actually go online and sell your Christmas presents on eBay literally on Christmas Day, you know.
Oh, that's just indecent, isn't it? It's ungrateful, that. I think you should wait one day.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah, put it down to Boxing Day and so on, and go from there. So, Jessica, I take it you'll be back with us as well?
Yes. Yes, please, Jessica. Invite me back.
Jessica Burtis, who actually, rather like yourself, Robin, has actually been sent a full version of my Kirk versus Cook lecture. Because unlike yourself, I mean, at least, Robin, you were a week early. Jessica sadly missed it by a day. She was just a day ahead of the actual session. It's okay.
As you keep saying, time is an illusion.
Completely. Which is why we're doing the Waters of Oz yesterday. Life continues. Graham Harper, Robin Pierce, and Jessica Burtis, keep on keeping on, and bye for now.
Bye.
And bye-bye. Bye.
Ah, the post office, that wonderful, essential part of all Christmases. What? I hear you say everything's being done via email this year? No, not of course. Of course not. We've got the post office helping to deliver festive cheer in all sorts of ways, and to actually talk us through some of the ways in which the post office is obviously the fourth or indeed fifth emergency service this Christmas. We're delighted to welcome the Managing Director of Mails and Retail at the post office. It's Mark Civita. How are you, Mark?
Hey, I'm great. Thanks, Alex.
Excellent. Now, more than 100,000 SMEs have signed up to this drop-and-go service, which actually improves on 50% from last year. But first of all, Mark, talk to us about how the post office are actually going to be coping with this Christmas period. Will it be as busy as ever, or even busier, given the pandemic?
Alex, I think it's going to be even busier. It's the busiest time of year, and actually, for us, sometimes the most fun time of year. We get out there and spend our time in post offices as well. We normally have 10 million visitors a week, and we're expecting that to go up to 15 million visitors a week, which is quite an increase. But we've got more people, we're planning, and we're really focusing on getting people to actually come in early for Christmas and make sure that they're avoiding the queues where possible.
Now, I mentioned at the start, of course, about everything being online, of course, but even if you are shopping online via those well-known online merchants and so on and so forth, particularly, obviously, small medium enterprises as well, your goods still need to be delivered. So talk to us about how small businesses in particular can take advantage of some of the services that you're actually offering this year, Mark.
So we've got a service called Drop and Go, and it's really, really straightforward. You literally take the orders from your customers, take it into your local post office, just give us the parcels and we'll weigh them, we'll label them, and we'll get them posted for you. You just go online, top up your card so that you can pay for it. And it's as simple as that. And then small businesses can focus on exactly what they do really, really well, which is to create products and sell those products.
And we are obviously approaching the end of the month of November, heading into December. I mean, last posting dates for Christmas will be coming through the system. Can you actually share with us in terms of how soon business should actually be getting into to play? And indeed, how far shoppers should actually be looking in terms of sending their packages to make sure they get there in time for the big day?
So the last posting date for first class is the 21st of December, Alex. But I wouldn't wait till then. We're starting to see massive increases already. Last week I was in a post office and They were telling me that almost every day, like run up to Christmas Day, so there's quite a lot of volume. But if you look at international mail as well, best place to go is www.postoffice.co.uk, and you'll see all the posting dates there to make sure that you don't miss sending something to a relative or a friend overseas as well.
You've already mentioned the actual go-to website from that point of view. What will you be doing over the festive period, Mark? Is it a case of you'll be in your bubble assisting Santa, coordinating things as forever, or do you get a chance to have a break?
There won't be much chance for a break. I love being out in post offices, so I'm not sure whether I'm an asset or a liability, but I'll be there with my PPE on and helping support the business. It's the best time of the year for us.
There you go, Mark Siviter, Managing Director of Mails and Retail at the Post Office. Huge thanks, and if we don't speak beforehand, have a splendid holiday period.
Thank you, and you, Alex.
We've spoken over the years about the importance of small local businesses and indeed shopping locally and indeed saving on the global footprint of miles and such like. Think farmyards, not farm miles, not food miles, of course, being one of the phrases we use. But it seems in the run-up to Christmas that actually it's even more crucial that we actually seriously consider shopping locally because of some interesting facts that have just been revealed from a recent survey that Visa have produced in partnership with the Centre for Economic and Business Research. And to talk us through that, we're delighted to welcome from Visa the wonderful Dominic White. How are you, Dominic?
Very well, thanks, Alex. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. Now, share with us this statement or these findings that, in a sense, are kind of fairly clear in terms of if we want to actually support our local stores and not see them go under, particularly in the pandemic year that we've actually had, it's really crucial that we actually keep the money within the local economy.
Absolutely. What we found with the research was that more than a third of the money that's spent in the local economy, in fact, about £3.80 out of every £10, stays within the economy in the community in terms of suppliers and other spending, which is a great story to support the local businesses and local communities.
It's fascinating to see that it's those in Wales and the South West that are the least likely to shop locally, spending just £1.90 of every £10 in the local side of things. I mean, there are lots of comments one could say about Wales and the South West, which I obviously won't do at this particular stage, but I mean, that just seemed unusual because I was particularly thinking Welsh folk in particular tend to be seen as more patriotic. I would have thought they would have actually been more keen to shop locally than others.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because a lot of over half say they want to. There's quite a strong support base, and we're trying to lend our voice to encourage people to double their spending. So whatever they're spending today, let's double it. It doubles the money that stays in the community, and I think it's a really practical thing that we can do to help the local communities and local businesses running up to Christmas and beyond Christmas too, of course.
And certainly there are lots of community benefits that come across as well. Over half of the people surveyed say it's important for them to shop locally because they know how much their custom means. And actually 43% say they get a boost of happiness when they support local shopkeepers.
Yes,
I suppose
yes.
It does give that sense of one community that actually is important rather than actually going to the sometimes faceless and impersonal global companies that are obviously out there.
Yeah, look, like I think everything has a place, but supporting that local community, that was really interesting, that stat that you mentioned about the burst of happiness. I think that was something that was really interesting. And I've noticed that in my local community and our neighbours have, just with not being able to get out as much in the last few months, last, you know, 6 months. And that happiness of sharing that and working, shopping in local community shops, independent retailers, that sort of thing. It definitely has had that effect on my local area.
Which is great. Now, Dominic, I suspect New Zealand background, is that correct?
Or are you going to say Australia? Australia.
It is Australia. Australia. Oh, Lord, almost. No. Okay. Now, clearly, from that point of view, you're over in Britain. I mean, is there a change in Australia? Are Australians more likely to support and shop local from that point of view as opposed to...
We do see this as a bit of a trend all around the world. I like small businesses really are the heart of communities and heart of economies, and they employ masses of amounts of people and often self-employed people. And the excitement of small businesses when you start up, you get that sale, whether it's online or in store, through whichever platform you're using, it really means everything to the people that are setting up those businesses. So there is definitely a trend, and we've been working with different groups all around UK and other places around the world, in Australia as well, with to support small business groups and helping them thrive.
Now, certainly the last 12 months have been fairly clearly challenging for local businesses and so on and so forth. And that support that's actually a critical part of the whole sort of system can only be enhanced by things like word of mouth recommendations, because obviously it's more than one thing to actually like to support your businesses, but you want to make sure from their point of view that the SMEs are, you know, doing the business as well, really.
Yes, yes. That word of mouth is so critical, and that's what we found in the survey as well, just how important that is. And it's a practical thing that we can do as well to support the local community businesses.
Via, of course, things like social media. I mean, that's something which I must admit, I tend to, not ignore, but when I get requests saying, could you please leave positive support, etc., normally I tend to be of that sort of mindset that if I'm quite happy with something, I won't say anything. Is that something, again, that's particularly British, that we need to actually, you know, kind of become more effusive in our praise rather than, well, it's perfectly okay, why do you want me to say it was perfectly okay in public, etc.?
I think it's horses for courses, really, Alex. I think if you feel comfortable doing it that way, it does help the businesses. But it's also important just talking to neighbours and people you bump into, and telling stories about the local gift shop and the local grocers and that sort of thing. I think that's key too.
And where would you suggest people should actually go to find out further information, Dominic, about this particular aspect and so on?
I think you can visit our website, visa.co.uk. And there's information for small businesses and consumers as well on the website there.
Dominic White from Visa, huge thanks. Take care and have a great festive season.
Thank you, Alex. Same to you. Thanks for having me on.
Well, Black Friday is approaching, and I know you might well say, oh, that's another American thing. Well, no, we're still looking for online bargains. And in fact, bagging a bargain is, it would seem, one of the greatest joys we can actually have. Now, to talk us through some of the key ways in which a recent survey has demonstrated about how 37% of us actually consider bagging a bargain to indeed be one of life's greatest pleasures, we're delighted to welcome two fabulous individuals, Money Medics extraordinaire Nicholas Aguancha and Ashley Aguancha. How are you, folks?
Hi everyone,
not too bad, just early morning.
Nice. Well, early morning time, it's just an illusion. I mean, if you want to bag a bargain, Nicholas, surely it doesn't matter the time of day. I mean, you should be there. I mean, in certain countries, it's sort of evening now if we're looking at online stuff, etc. So we work on that basis. But talk us through this particular survey, Nicholas, and obviously the findings. Were you surprised by any of the results?
Not really, to be honest with you. I think the research conducted by Honey, it shows that there is a big emotional connection when you discover or bag a discount. I think I'm no scientist, but I think there's a massive dopamine hit when you know that you saved some sort of money and you're making your pounds go a bit further.
Yeah, I mean, actually, from your own point of view, I mean, do you get that sort of rush when you feel as though you've made a saving of 20%, 30% and so on, you've actually scored that particular hit? Is it as strong when you're online as when you're actually in the real world?
I'd probably say it's probably stronger online because, you know, obviously you've looked for the discount codes and you found them. And then the best thing is that it's worked. So it just makes the purchase feel even more valuable. And I appreciate it more when it comes, like, oh my gosh, it's like almost too good to be true. So yeah, it is really exciting. I think in like real life in the shops, it's not as exciting, no.
Okay, Nick, from your own point of view then, clearly we're in the virtual world here, and it makes sense that obviously Black Friday is followed by Cyber Monday and so on. Lots of surveys have suggested that actually the kind of deals and discounts which we're sort of being provided with by many of the online companies aren't necessarily as good as they might seem. I mean, any thoughts in terms of that? Is it always a case of caveat emptor or let the buyer beware?
No, I thank you for mentioning that. I think it's important to know that retailers have their own shopping hacks and tips and tricks for making you spend more than you wanted to. So I think it's something definitely to be wary of, especially I'm not sure if the people are aware of the term anchoring. So it's when you pair a good that's £10 versus a good that's £100 and you're trying to compare the value, or you see £4.99 or and £9. It's kind of tricks like that. So people should be aware of those sales tactics.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, certainly the reduce the price by one penny is something that is, goes all the way back to even pre-internet days as a wonderful way in which people actually said, oh, it's a bargain, it's £4.99 as opposed to £5 or whatever, but still, so it goes. Ashley, what are your tips in terms of how people should actually cope with Black Friday? I mean, is it best to wait? Do you actually, a bit like an eBay auction, you wait until the last moment and then you fire in? Or is it a case of no, go early and go large?
I think I'd probably say, so I'm like a suspense person, so I don't really like to wait. So I definitely like to go early and go large. I think one of the biggest things that I can say is make sure you have a plan, because what it is, if you don't have a plan, you're going to spend money that you don't have and, you know, buy things that you don't need. So that means it's like, for example, make a list of, you know, what are you looking for? What is your budget and what are your limits? So if, for example, if you're planning to buy a laptop and your budget is £500 and you see like a 2000 laptop with a £200 discount, that is literally way above your limit. Another thing that I would say is that there are different things that you can do, such as downloading browser extensions such as Honey. And basically what that does is that it searches the internet for like online discount codes and automatically applies to your cart. And that kind of relieves like the pressure of, you know, constantly having to find a good bargain. So those are like some of the tips that I would mention.
Nick, is there a great deal of competition that's actually out there in terms of obviously brands that are battling for our particular customer and indeed between customers themselves?
No, there is a great deal of competition. I think companies and retailers have been impacted by the pandemic. So they are varying for people's attention in different ways. And I think they're definitely going to make the most of this Black Friday sales to really attract and incentivize customers to shop and spend more than they wanted.
And clearly we are in the midst of the pandemic. I think most people are aware of that. 70% of us are now in the midst of spending up to 5 hours a week looking for voucher codes and so on. I mean, Ashley, roughly is that matching your particular number, or is it a case of, no, I do at least 10 hours a week?
Do you know what? I'll be honest, I'm guilty of that. I think it probably is 5 hours a week, because imagine if like you're online shopping maybe 2 to 3 times a week and you're looking for discounts maybe an hour or an hour and a half at the time. The time actually does add up. So yeah, I think it's about accurate.
Right. Okay. And Nick, where would you suggest people should actually go to download the Honey app to actually help them obviously find and locate the best deals in the virtual world?
It's really simple. So all you have to do is go to joinhoney.com. You go onto the website, you download the extension, and literally it just works in the background. So think of Honey as a spell checker on steroids, in the sense that before you send an email, you can imagine that, and you're frantically checking if there's any typos. Honey will frantically check the internet for workable discounts, and that's pretty much it. And you go about your normal day-to-day shopping.
A spell checker on steroids. I just have this image now of a kind of virtual avatar for Honey actually sort of battling against other devices and sort of seeking the success of their consumer-led keyboard warriors, which sure is a whole new world. Fascinating actually sharing some thoughts with the good souls today. Of course, Nick Aguancha and Ashley Aguancha from, of course, Money Medics. Many thanks indeed. Take care and happy holidays to you both.
Happy holidays, Alex. Pleasure.
Don't get lax, even with a vax. That might be a takeaway message from what we're going to be speaking about today, because new research commissioned by Sterilise Hand Sanitizer suggests that since the first lockdown, there has been a change in people's behavior around COVID-19 hygiene. And surely the best person to actually address this and indeed keep us on our toes with the classic line of enthusiasm and dynamism that she brings to every session she shares with us, it's Dr. Sarah Jarvis, MBE. How are you, Sarah?
I am very well indeed, and after an introduction, looking forward to hearing me speak. what a run-in!
It's tremendous, absolutely, and good to see you for a change. Because as I say, normally we're vocal, but here we are in person. So, is this again a case of human nature? You just can never actually overestimate the joys of human nature. We hear tales about a vaccine coming about, possibly in the new year, and being sorted, and already people are saying, "Oh, we don't have to bother then with our standard hygiene. The heck with it."
I think that's probably right. So as you say, this was research which says that a quarter of Brits thought they could be more relaxed with their hygiene because of the vaccine, but another quarter are saying that compared to May 2020, so just 6 months ago, they were sanitising much less than they were. They'd previously been sanitising about up to five times a day. And of course, that's what you need, because especially because we're actually going out on the whole, even in lockdown, I think, and doing more than we were during the first lockdown, there is much more opportunity to come into contact with the virus.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm speaking to you today from my university office, which, of course, you know, education, we're immune to the virus in any case, because that's what we're about, et cetera. It's just the way forward.
I forgot.
Yeah, exactly. But in terms of obviously this particular Helping Hands campaign that Sterilies are involved with, it's very important that people are aware of the importance of maintaining those sanitary precautions and indeed washing regularly.
It is, absolutely. So what we saw in the survey was that Brits are blaming forgetfulness, they're blaming laziness, and really importantly, this is the one I'm not surprised about, perhaps the impact of sanitizer on their hands. Now, I think at the beginning of lockdown, all of us, you know, along with discovering furlough for the first time and discovering lockdown for the first time, discovered lockdown hands. Now, there's no question that your hands do not like an environment which is too wet, too dry, too hot, too cold, or too windy. And spending a lot of time in water can actually dry your hands out. But also, really importantly, of course, so can products. So for instance, we don't recommend soap substitutes if you're washing your hands, which we often use for children, for instance, who have eczema, because they don't appear to be as effective as soap is. Likewise, we've been recommending at least 60% alcohol hand sanitizer, because that is effective against viruses. Problem is, it's also very, very drying. But we do now have an alternative. If you use a product which contains at least 300 parts per million of hypochlorous acid, such as Sterilies, and which, of course, also really importantly, has been tested to the highest standards. So, for instance, the European standard, the BSEN 1500 test, because we know exactly what that is, that looks specifically at how this sanitizer performed on hands and used alcohol as a control. So you need one which has been shown to be as effective. But the important thing about this is not only is it as effective, but it's also pH neutral, and it's much, much kinder to skin. Indeed, it's been used in wound care in hospitals. It's so gentle on skin. It's widely used as a clinical disinfectant, but now we have products which have been tested on hands rather than surfaces.
Well, I do have upon my desk, obviously, one hand sanitizer bottle, which is obviously there from that point of view, plus, of course, the mask from that perspective. So we're all set and ready to go. But when I actually encounter the students, when I go out and about and deal with our face-to-face tuition from that point of view. But in terms of encouraging British folk to keep up this sanitizing practice, I was actually talking to one of my students this morning about how their behavior has actually changed since lockdown. And they were originally from Bermuda. So, I mean, they've had an interesting sort of experience of the whole thing in their higher education journey. But is it a case of we need to obviously be gently nudging folk along, using that classic public relations technique, as opposed to saying, if you don't sanitize your hands, we'll shoot you?
Absolutely. It's exactly what we need to do. And what we know, for instance, is that, you know, nobody forgets to brush their teeth because we've got into a habit of it. We need to try and encourage to set examples so that other people will get into the habit of doing it. And once you're doing it really regularly, then people on the whole will stick at it. But, and this is the big but, if you do something and it has negative short-term consequences, we also know you are less likely to continue to do it. And that is where, of course, this drying effect of hand sanitizers comes in. So if we can also get people to get into the habit after they've washed their hands, if they have dry skin, of using an unscented moisturizer and just using that really regularly, like you, I have my hand sanitizer, but I also have my pot of moisturizer, which stays with me at all times. But also provide them with viable alternatives which are as effective. At the outset of the pandemic, we were very strongly saying 60% plus alcohol because that's the one that's been proven to work. The problem with that is it is undoubtedly drying. But now we have effective alternatives, as effective if you use the right strength of hypochlorous acid, 300 plus parts per million, but also kinder to skin. So that's a positive message we can put out there.
I think it's fair to say that the days when people who would wash their hands regularly or 5 or 6 times a day would be possibly accused of being OCD and obsessive compulsive, they've kind of long gone. And maybe they're actually sort of sitting back thinking, ah, we told you. You see, it's all sorts of humor. Where can people go to find out further information, Sarah, about this particular survey and more?
They can go to www.sterilese.com. That's S-T-E-R-I-L-E-E-Z-E.
As ever, an absolute delight. And you know the final two questions, Sarah, but I'll put them to you in any case. It's par for the course. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
I've had a marvellous Zoomer, and it's been great fun to be on Zoom and actually to see you, Alex.
No, it's just it's a whole new world, really. So I take it then you will return in the not-too-distant future. You'll come back and speak to us once more.
With the greatest of pleasure.
Dr. Sarah Jarvis, MBE, huge thanks. I'm sure it'll only be a matter of time, Sarah, before it'll be Dame Sarah Jarvis. I think we'll work our way through that step by step. It will happen, I've no doubt. For the moment, though, many thanks.
Thank you so much.
Well, it certainly seems as though we are living in an Orwellian age due to a variety of reasons, but maybe one of the things we haven't thought about is the rise of stalkerware is actually out there. You may not even have heard of stalkerware in terms of the cyber world that actually it entails, but it is a very serious aspect that seems to be impinging on people's liberties and a whole variety of other aspects. And to talk us through some of the challenges that are faced with respect to stalkerware in general, we're delighted to welcome from Kaspersky the wonderful David M. How are you, David?
Hi there. Yeah, I'm very well, thank you.
David, let's start off by talking about what exactly stalkerware actually is, because I think, again, people might be aware of the notion of being stalked and the whole line of that. But stalkerware, it's all to do with software that actually can really sort of monitor people without their consent in any way, shape or form.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, taking the real world idea of stalking someone, this is translating it into our electronic age. Somebody puts an app onto a device and that app is able to monitor their interests on social media, contacts, text messages, calls, everything really, and relay all of the data related to that to somebody else, the person who's doing the stalking. So it literally is digital stalking that we're talking about here. So it's just like the rest of us are dependent on, digital communications. So too, we're finding domestic abuse making use of the same technology that we're all using.
I mean, this is the thing, of course, because looking at some of the figures here in the United Kingdom, more than 900 cases of stalkerware have been detected by your company Kaspersky since January. The UK has the third highest reported case of the invasive software in Europe, just behind Germany and Italy, above Spain, France and Poland. Internationally, we're ninth, just above Saudi Arabia. I mean, this really seems as though, you know, whenever we use applications like, dare I say it, Zoom or indeed social media or areas along those sort of lines, it's kind of like being a kind of ongoing joke. Well, CIA are listening or indeed the KGB might be listening, etc. But it seems as though this is something which is even more sinister.
Well, it is. I mean, if you look at something like Zoom and these other group meeting applications, there are privacy and security settings on there. So a lot of the kind of insecurity around those comes because people haven't taken account of that, you know, and they're publishing a link to a Zoom meeting online so anybody can join, for example. In this case, though, we are literally talking about somebody planting something on your device without your knowledge, without your consent, and using it to spy on you, basically. And you're right, I mean, 900 this year so far, but that's just the visible tip of a much bigger iceberg, because that's obviously just what is being fed back from our software. And indeed, not just that, but from people who've consented to provide anonymized data back to us. But of course, you know, whereas most people put antivirus on a desktop or a laptop, they don't protect their mobile devices. So there's many, many more people that we don't know about, but certainly it's a sizable problem. And of course, it's it's been growing over the last few years as this technology has started to develop.
Now, there are a number of other issues that obviously spring to mind with respect to this, not least of which, tragically, is sufferers of domestic abuse, and indeed how people who are perpetrators of domestic abuse can not only sort of engage in financial abuse, but also monitor the innocent victim in all sorts of ways. I mean, that's got to be a nightmare scenario, really, because, certainly it's bad enough any form of abuse, but this sort of line of things could well sort of lead people to feel extremely vulnerable.
Yeah, exactly. And it, again, going back to the idea of we're translating a real world situation into the digital world. I mean, there've always been people who try to steal money from people, let's say at the bank, but with electronic payments, it becomes easier to do because you can do it remotely. You don't have to kind of get feet on the ground. The same is true with this. There've always been people who've stalked people and engaged in some kind of surveillance or as part of an abusive relationship, let's say, but doing it electronically is so much easier. And that's really what we're talking about here is abuse. These applications will pitch themselves sometimes as, for example, parental control apps. But the difference is that's deployed in the open. It's known about. This is being deployed without somebody's knowledge or consent. So somebody is gaining physical access to your device, and that is probably based on a level of trust, which, let's face it, in any relationship, there's got to be that basic level of trust. And then with it on there, it's literally allowing them to electronically stalk you.
It's approximately 1 year ago, November 2019, when the Coalition Against Stalkerware was actually formed. How effective is that in terms of addressing this issue?
Well, the idea of malicious spyware of different kinds has been around for many, many, many years. What's different about this is that it's being used within the context of domestic abuse, and yet not that much is known about it. So when we started up the Coalition Against Stalkerware, and this brings in people from the industry, people helping domestic abuse victims, people like Europol as well, the idea was to really shine a light on this area, make awareness of it much more widespread, both for legislators and regulators, but also for individual members of the public as well. So that's really what we've been trying to do, is shine a light on this as a problem and highlight the fact that actually there are security applications that can detect this stuff when it's on a mobile device. So there are things that can be done.
Well, that's the next question, of course, David, that we've talked about the problem and the challenges. Are there indeed solutions? Are there ways in which, just as we actually learn, as you said earlier, to protect our basic accounts from hacking and such like stuff, we can actually download something relatively painlessly, which is going to actually prevent stalkerware from taking part in our own software?
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, from our point of view as a vendor of security software, to us, this is, technically speaking, at least just another form of detection, along with viruses and worms and Trojans and all that other kind of malicious software. So, yes, it's detectable. What makes it different, I think, is the fact that, you know, if I detect a banking Trojan on your device designed to steal your banking credentials, then we find it, we remove it, and that's the job over. In the case of stalkerware, it's not quite so simple, because this is within the context of a wider domestic abuse situation. So as a victim, I might realize that there's something on the device, but if I just rip it out, the problem then is that the person surveilling me knows that. And the risk, of course, is it then escalates into a physical abuse. So, you know, that's why really it's vitally important that anybody who's in a situation where they think they may be being abused in this way doesn't just put something on their device to monitor and flag up any attempts to do this, but also has a wider support network, which may be friends, it may be family, it may be reaching out to organizations that can help, such as Refuge UK, for example, who operate a national domestic abuse helpline, and really trying to establish a sort of a support network. And I guess bottom line as well is perhaps a sort of escape route. So if you detect something like this on your device, you then have a plan as to, right, where do I go in terms of maybe talking to the police and so on. So that's really, really important.